stories don't define you. How you tell them will. Hi, I'm Sarah Elkins, your host and chief story maker of Elkins Consulting.
When we share stories, whether in our personal or business lives, how we share them makes a difference in how we remember them and in how we're perceived by the people we're sharing them with. When you're listening to this podcast, I encourage you to listen and consider your own related stories. To listen and think about which stories in your life might have impacted you in a similar way. And think about how you share those stories and the messages they carry for you and for the people who are hearing them.
I am here today virtually drinking a glass of wine with my friend Karen Beach. And we met probably about 6 or 8 weeks ago via a Facebook group about podcasts, guests, and hosts. And The irony is I've had so many people send me email messages about offering to find me podcast guests and, you know, are you struggling to find podcast guests? Because we offer this service. I'm like, you know, I don't have a problem at all finding podcast guests because I meet interesting people every single day. Right. And but the reason I was on that Facebook group is because I did just publish a book and I'm trying to get more exposure for it. And my friends and colleagues all said, get onto other people's podcasts. And that's why I happened to be there. So Karen interviewed me on Fun, Feisty, and Fabulous podcast. And it was so much fun. It totally lived up to its name. And we've been friends ever since.
Yes, we have. And I'm probably one of the few guests who's actually been to Montana.
That may be true. Tell me about your trip to Montana.
When I first moved to Charlotte in like 2006, I worked for a company that was growing in Charlotte, but both of the sisters were from Montana. And so they had a core office in Montana, and I got to go up there a couple times. It's a beautiful country. I love the speed limit. I got to speed. Met a lot of really good people. So it was a good experience.
I'm glad to hear that. And I think we talked briefly about that during a different phone call. Mm-hmm. It wasn't for the interview that you did.
No, I think because with Fun Feisty Fabulous, because I know the name of my podcast, Fun Feisty Fabulous, we're doing virtual happy hours right now. And I think we talked about it on a happy hour.
That makes sense. Yep, I think that's when it was. And I was so relieved to hear that you had a good experience here, because I know that there has been some, especially is always gone on, but of course it's worse right now. And anytime a person of color tells me they've been here, I always hold my breath waiting for the next line.
Well, so I'm just relieved. It's funny when I have two stories about it. One is kind of racial. The other one is just kind of crazy. So I'll leave with the racial one. I was driving my SUV, I don't even know the name of an SUV because I'm a car girl, but I was driving my SUV up to work the first day and, you know, I parallel parked and I'm about to get out of the car and these two girls were just staring at me like, what's she doing here? You know, and I'm kind of like gave them a little wave. It's like, it's okay. It's okay. I'm here, but for work. And then the second story, you know, I'm in the plane. I forget where we flew in to connect, but we got on a smaller plane. And I was like, I'm the only Black person on this plane. And I didn't know anybody on the plane. So I'm sitting there and I hear someone behind me go, Karen, Karen. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's finally happened. I've lost my mind and I'm hearing people say my name. So I'm like, let's just pretend that didn't happen. And I hear it again. Karen, Karen. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to turn around. There's going to be like a purple gnome standing behind me saying my name. And I finally got up the courage to turn around and it was one of our contractors. So I'm like, oh, okay. But it was great he was there because he was like, as soon as we get in, before you get on the freeway, go to Walmart, pick up water, pick up a few other things. He was like, Because as soon as you hit the freeway, you're not going to see anything else. And it was weird because I'm originally from Cleveland. I've lived in LA. I've been in different places. And every exit has gas stations, fast food places. But in Montana, it was like nothing.
That's right.
And like you go past exit after exit and you're like, I mean, it's beautiful mountains and everything, but there is nothing else. But yeah, I like the speed limit is fast. It was like 75.
It's 80 now.
Even better. I need to go to Montana just to drive fast.
Well, you can come here and we'll hang out. I would love to show you around my little part of Montana. And, you know, there are two parts to that story that lit me up. One was when you said that those two girls were staring at you. Depending on the town, like I pulled into Sydney, Montana, which is a very small city, and I got stared at. And I'm just this little white girl. And people just stare at me like, why are you here all by yourself in this? So I think outsiders generally, but you must have gotten twice as many looks that I did. So it's really funny. And the second thing was the key to coming to Helena, Montana, or pretty much any of the other cities in Montana, is that you will always know one person on the plane, at least one person. And I learned that really early on because it's a small state. There are only a million people here. So you're almost guaranteed, if you spend any time at all here, you're guaranteed to have some weird connection with somebody else who knows somebody from Montana.
I'm just glad it was a person and not
not your imagination. You know,
so I turned around like this.
Oh, high altitude. Yeah. Messes with your brain. So I want to swing back to the beginning. The reason I invited Karen on my podcast after she interviewed me for hers was that she has this incredible energy. Karen, you exude this warmth and curiosity. And I think it's so important to amplify voices like yours.
Thank you. Have such an
open way of talking about things. You know, people are talking a lot about how to have conversations. And I'm not worried about you. You know how to have conversations.
No, so, I'm that person that goes to the store and is like, what are you buying? Why are you buying that? How does that taste? What is that like? I'm that person.
Yes, exactly. You start conversations and I love that. And you ask good questions. So I just wanted to start asking you some questions and hear more stories. Tell me about, you were mentioning during our, it might have been during our happy hour, but actually it was during our other recording. You're mentioning that when you moved into a neighborhood that was predominantly white, I think, but you said that the boys were really mean to you and they said really mean things to you and it affected your confidence for a long time. And can you tell me that story again?
Yeah. My family pulled the Jeffersons. I don't know if you know the Jeffersons theme song, but it's all about moving on up to the east side. That's what we did when I was about 5. So the neighborhood I grew up in was like 95% Jewish. And it was weird because the school district and everything was 95% Jewish. But when Black people started moving there, they moved us all onto the same two streets. So the neighborhood was Black, but my school district and everything was majority Jewish. In fact, when I went to college, I thought it was weird to meet white Christians, because I just assumed white people were Jewish. So, you know, it's like, you're Christian, but you're white. So, and it's weird because when I got to be about 13, I was a bit of a tomboy. So, and my cousins, the twins, Stephen and Michael, lived across the street. So I was always around a lot of boys. And when I went to school, several of the black boys called me black and ugly. And it was weird because they called me black and ugly, but then I went out for the drill team, even though I'm like 5'5", 120 pounds, because I was kind of curvy. They were like, you're too fat to be on the drill team. And, you know, but all the girls on the drill team wanted me to help them learn how to dance. But I'm not good enough to be on the drill team because of my figure. So because of that, and because of the black and ugly comments, I left school with this huge complex, you know, that I wasn't pretty, that I wasn't good enough. And for a long time, I dated guys who wanted to date me, which seems like a good thing, except I didn't really want to date them. It was just that's who was interested in me. And I didn't, I figured if I went after a guy, he wouldn't be interested in me. So I went out with these guys who never put me first and never made me a priority, just to go out, just to have interaction, because I felt, well, he doesn't think I'm black and ugly. He doesn't have a problem with my figure, my shape. So I made a lot of bad choices. A lot of bad choices. Yeah.
Do you remember the last one you made when you just were like, okay, this has got to stop?
I was probably in my 40s. Yeah, it's been a while. And, you know, it's a lot of people will say, because, you know, I'm reasonably successful. I do okay, college grad, blah, 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 blah. And a lot of people were telling me as an African-American that I need to give guys a chance that don't have my education and don't have my background. And I ended up going out with this guy. And I had just come through a period of unemployment, and I met him while volunteering. So how can you meet a sociopath while you volunteer? But I did. And he was out of work, and he wanted me to help him. So he got his mother, lots of air quotes in this story, on the phone saying, oh, if you could only help him, I'm getting this big settlement and I'll pay you back. So I took out 3 payday loans for him.
Oh, no.
And he never paid me back. He was supposed to have had a job doing construction, more air quotes, doing construction, traveling, doing construction. And he's like, oh, babe, I'm going to be gone for Christmas and da, 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 da. And I drove by his house and his mailbox door was broken and he had a bunch of mail. So I'm like, okay, well, he's still out of town. So it was January 2nd and we were off of work and I got in my car and my mom died when I was 15. But you could have sworn that she was sitting in that passenger seat because she was, I had a coupon for Chick-fil-A for a spicy chicken biscuit. I remember it. I was going to get my chicken biscuit. And my mother, whose spirit was sitting in the passenger side, was like, you don't go anywhere until you go by that boy's house. Because that's how my mother would talk. She would get, she was a teacher. And so I would say she would get extra teacher because her voice would get, she was like, you do not get anything until you go by that boy's house. And I was like, okay. So I went by and a girl entered the door. And I was like, is Julian here? And she's like, my friend took him to work. So I'm like, okay, is your friend like your boyfriend? Like, what's going on? And I'm like, how are you, she taking him to work when he was working out of town? And so me being kind of laid back girl, I'm like, well, okay, tell him Karen came by. She's like, okay. And she closed the door. I got back in the car. And then my mother came back. And she said, soon as I got on the freeway, you get off at this next exit, you turn around, you go back to that house, and you find out who that girl was. So I'm like, okay. So I go back to the house and I'm like, hey, it's Karen again. He's kind of my boyfriend, so could you just tell him I came by? And the girl's like, really? That's your boyfriend? Well, he's my friend's boyfriend. And I'm like, okay. So I come in, I sit down, and the friend is like, well, she's on her way back. And I'm sitting there, and there's a little dog that keeps coming in and out. And when the girl came home, I remembered this time that Julian had asked to borrow my dog, Marty. He was like, oh, my cousin's dog would like him and whatever. He took my dog to meet his girlfriend's dog.
I'm like,
you're using my dog in your malfeasance? And so we talked, we compared stories. But remember, he still owed me for 3 payday loans. Right. So she called him and he was like, don't listen to anything she said. She's a crackhead. Like, I'm a homeowner. I've had my job for 3 years. Does that sound like a crackhead? So we go down to where she dropped him off at. How about it's the back of the courthouse?
Oh, boy.
And finally, I'm like, I'm done with this. So I got in my car. This whole time, I have not cried, even though I wanted to. And I'm like, let me go to the bank and close my account because these payday loans were taking so much money out of my account that I couldn't even pay my mortgage. So I went to Bank of America and I sat there, talked to the guy, and all of a sudden, waterworks. And he took my money and he said, he's going to pay me back. He's like, I'm so sorry, ma'am. I'm so sorry. So I ended up closing that account. And it took me a good 7 months to pay off all that credit card debt. I meant credit card, but payday loans.
Wow.
But I did. So that was actually the last guy I dated. Because after that, I was like, more wine.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. It's just so amazing to me when somebody like you, with so full of consciousness and intelligence, gets sucked into that kind of thing and happens all the time. I mean,
The one before him was, I thought he was the one. We were supposed to get married and have all this great life, and then come to find out he's already married. He has a kid.
Oh.
It was.
Wow, you're meeting the wrong people, my friend.
The longest chapter is guys I've dated, and it's called The Cavalcade of Clowns.
That totally works.
I
love that your mom came and kind of cut that off and woke you, because that's what you need sometimes, is for that kind of,
I wish
voice.
She would do it more often.
I have that inner voice sometimes, but I often don't listen to it. So I'm really glad you listened to that inner voice.
I didn't have a choice because, like, seriously, it was like my mom. And, like, when do you not listen to your mom when she's kind of in your face telling you what to do?
Yeah, that's true. I get that. And I hope that's how my boys feel.
I think that's how everybody feels, because you have those mom ways. So they understand those mom ways.
Yeah, I do make a good mom face when I mean it.
This is one of the drawbacks of not having kids of my own. I can't yell at them without moving my lips, which my mom was good at. You need to sit down right now. How are you doing that? But she could do it really well.
Yeah, that's so funny. I love that story because it's such a pivotal time. It's that moment when you realize, I deserve better. This is not right. And I would rather be by myself and comfortable in my skin and my own company than to have somebody else around that's not right. And amen. That takes advantage.
Amen. And see, my life, one of the things about my life, if you would have asked me when I was a little girl what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would have told you a lawyer. But then I would have also said, I want to be happy. Mm. And one of the things that I've been able to do is make my life things that I enjoy. I enjoy podcasting. I enjoy cooking. I enjoy spending time with my friends and my crazy dog. That's who I am. Like when my birthday comes, I go sing karaoke. I try to make my life as much as possible about things that I enjoy, things that I like. So if you're a man and you're coming into my life, you have to bring something positive. I dated one guy and we went out 3 times and I told him, this is not going to work. And he said, why? I said, because I've been out with you 3 times and I haven't laughed once. I laugh when I'm by myself. So I don't expect you to be, you know, Chris Rock or, you know, Dave Chappelle, but you know, there should be something. I shouldn't feel defensive when I'm around someone that I'm dating.
Oh, that's the key right there. You just had magic in those words. I shouldn't feel defensive when I'm with someone I'm dating. I would even say that is the case for anyone that you're spending time with. I mean, there are times when you're going to have a boss or a colleague that you're going to feel defensive with because they're always on the attack. But when it comes to people you choose to spend time with, whether it's a friend or a partner or even your kid, you have to figure out why you're feeling defensive about that person or around that person, or just not be around them. I should not have to feel defensive around people that I spend time with.
Yeah, I know. Like I had told him on our first date that I was thinking about making a documentary that it's kind of always in the back of my mind. And it was going to be called Perfection Rejection. And it was going to be about women rejecting the idea of being perfect. Because I had read this survey by the Dove Group that said that there's a significant portion of women that won't go to the doctor because they're afraid of being naked in front of the doctor.
Oh.
Are women that won't take a vacation to the beach, or even, you know, it affects their intimacy with their mate because they're uncomfortable with who they are. And I was going to do a documentary about that. And at the time, Michael Moore was doing Sick, his documentary about healthcare.
Yes.
And a commercial came on and he said, why don't you do a documentary about something important like that?
Women's confidence isn't important?
I'm just like, okay. Yeah, no. So
wow.
My third date. Oh, and then it has a good ending because I was working. I'm in training, so a lot of times we work with HR. And my friend Bunny was in HR, and she was like, this guy applied for a job here, but he's a doctor. So why does he want to work here? She said, let me check the deadbeat checker. I was like, ooh, what's the deadbeat checker? And it turns out it's the Mecklenburg County arrest records. Oh. So you can see if people have been arrested. So I said, just for fun, we'll see if this guy is on there. And he was.
Oh,
so when he told me he was out of town in Chicago for work, he really was in jail for non-payment of child support.
Oh, there's a red flag.
And he had told me what a great dad he was. So it was just like,
Wow. Well, yeah. Thank goodness you found out quickly. You trusted your instincts.
Mm-hmm. I would have found out about the sociopath on the deadbeat checker, but I misspelled his last name.
Oh, bummer. Boy, yeah. That's so funny. I have to tell you a funny story about the deadbeat checker. I first started working for the city here where I live, doing public affairs. It must be almost 7 years ago, 8 years ago, because I was there for 5.5 years and then became exclusively self-employed, started my business in earnest. And when I first started there, I started getting to know everyone in the city. So I knew the police chief, I knew the fire chief, I knew all the directors because I worked in the city manager's office. And I went to every city commission meeting. So I met all the commissioners, I met all the staff that went to those meetings and the mayor. And I got to know everybody pretty well, very quickly. And it was probably the fourth month that I had been there and I was already friends with the police chief. I just knew. So sitting at my computer and somebody gives me a call and she says, "Sarah, your name is on the warrant list." And I said, "What?" And then almost in the same moment, I get a Facebook Messenger pop up from another friend saying, "Sarah, your name is on the warrant list, on the outstanding warrant list." And I'm like, "What?" So I go, because I work for the city of Helena, I go straight to the website and they post the outstanding arrest warrants. And I see my name there, Sarah L. Elkins, and my heart starts pounding. And I was like, "What the heck? There is another Sarah L. Elkins in our county, like that wow. lives near here." And I had never met another person with, sorry, the dog just made a big noise. I had never met another person with my name. And so I was so puzzled when I saw.
Wow. And everybody and thought it was.
The police walks into my office right as I'm explaining this. No, the chief was like, "Of course I know it's not you." Otherwise, I might have said something. I said, "Okay, great." And the worst part is this young woman is probably about 7 years younger than I am. And I found out more and more information about her over the next few years, because not only was there an outstanding warrant for her arrest, she also, they almost started, what is that called? Garnishing my pay from the city. And I saw a chunk out of my paycheck on my stub. And I marched myself down to the HR office and I said, "What is this?" And she just kind of shrugged and she's like, "Well, it's a garnishment." And I said, "What? Wait a minute. Why would I have a garnishment?" She goes, "Well, you would have been notified by the court." And I'm like, "I have not received any notification from the court and I don't have any reason to have garnishment." And I said, "You've known me for 4 years. What would make you think that I would have garnishment from my paycheck?" And she said, "Well, you never know about people." I'm like, "Okay, granted, you're right about that, but you've known me a long time." And so she goes and looks it up. And the woman who had gone forward with the garnishment, who had processed it, was getting ready to leave for vacation when she processed it. So she didn't double check against the birth date and the social security number, which of course were different from mine. And so luckily we caught it right away and the payment didn't get to the court, because if it had gotten to the court, it would have taken a court order to stop it. So it might've been two or three paychecks that I would have had. We're talking like $600 or $800 out of each paycheck, which I was almost half of my pay. Anyway, I was really upset. So we got that worked out. And then when my husband and I decided to buy a second property as a rental unit, it came up against the title when they were doing the title research that there was a judgment against me. So that deadbeat list, I don't know how accurate that is.
Well, they have pictures. They have mugshots. So that's good.
Much better.
On Twitter, the other Karen Beach found me, but she's Karen D. Beach, not Karen L. Beach. But the funny thing is she is K-A-R-Y-N Beach. And we became like Facebook friends. So she'll comment on my post and my friends and her friends are like, "Wait, you're commenting on your own post?" And both of us are like, "No, it's another Karen Beach, but she's awesome. Just like me." So I need to go up. She's in Virginia Beach. I'm in North Carolina. So I need to go up and meet her.
Yes, you do. But that's not very far.
She's really cool. She's really cool. So I like her.
Yeah, that's not too far. You could definitely make that happen in a day trip.
Definitely.
Oh, you'll have to let me know how that goes when you decide to do it.
Yeah, I'll probably do a weekend because I did my freshman year in college around there. So there's a couple people I need to see. So
yeah,
I need to go up there.
Well, before we wrap this up, I would like to ask you a couple more questions. One would be, what would you want people to know about you? If you have this opportunity to meet people from all over the world when they listen to this podcast, what would you want them to know about you? Beside what I've already told them.
I would want them to know that even despite the situation that we're in now, I would like to be considered like I consider other people, which is on an individual basis. And if you look at me as an individual, I think you'll find someone who's funny, who's insightful, who looks to make everybody comfortable and everybody feel welcome. And you will find that if you go to Fun Feisty Fabulous.
That's true. And for our listeners, I will have a link that you can connect with Karen Beach and that you can listen to her episodes. I'll also include a specific link to the episode that we recorded, you and I recorded for yours. And so I'll definitely have those links on the associated blog post with this podcast. And my last question is, when you think about what's going on in our world right now, what advice would you give to people of color?
My advice is to let people know one-to-one. Drop the pretense. You know, I've had people come up to me speaking Ebonics. Okay, anybody that knows me knows I don't speak Ebonically. Is that a word, Ebonically? Anyway, I don't do that. But you know, get to know people and don't make assumptions because everyone is different. People meet me and they don't know that I have an encyclopedic knowledge of 80s music. You know, I listen to First Wave on Sirius XM all the time. I know Depeche Mode. I was singing Echo and the Bunnymen for no apparent reason earlier today. You know, when you meet people, you never know what you're going to get. So meet people and judge them individually, number one. Number two, if you want to affect change, I know we're all amped up about this election in November. And yes, who the president is important. Who's on the Senate is important. But equally as important is who's on your local level. Because those are the people that make the decisions about your property taxes, about what your kids are learning in school, about affordable housing. All that's done on the local level. And so if I was going to end with three things, the third thing would be to not let this be a moment. It's a moment right now, but it needs to be longer because, you know, you have companies like Aunt Jemima. Oh, we're taking Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben off the box. And I'm like, that's great. But what are you doing about hiring, getting rid of hiring discrimination? What are you doing about promoting people equally? What lasting changes are you at the corporation besides this superficial, I'm taking Aunt Jemima off the box? Because let's be honest, the people at Quaker Oats have known about problems with Aunt Jemima for a while.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're doing it now, it seems to me like you're placating, like you're taking advantage of a moment. But it needs to be more than a moment. So that's what I would say.
That's exactly right. And I'm so glad to hear you say that. It can't just be talking points. We have to see it. We have to see things change. We need to see that the C-suite isn't all white men.
Right, that there are women there, that there are Hispanics there, and Indians, and Native Americans. Mm-hmm. And here's the great thing, because my friends are everybody. I'm friends with everybody. And the thing is, when you get to know people outside of your circle becomes so much more interesting. It becomes so much more just lively. And, you know, like I might go salsa dancing with friends, or I might, you know, go to a Greek or Ethiopian restaurant and have, you know, a great meal and a great time. But you have all of these different people that can add so much to your life and to who you are.
Beauty and depth. Yes, absolutely. And I read recently this whole idea of assimilation and people trying to assimilate into this culture, whatever. And for decades, I've been saying, no. What we want is to value and appreciate those differences.
Right. You don't want to make a cheese sauce. You want to make a stew.
Yeah, exactly. That whole melting pot thing makes me crazy. I used to do Hanukkah presentations for the school across the street from my house where our boys went to elementary school. And the first year I did it, I just did the kindergarten class because my kid was in kindergarten. And I had offered to do that. And then the teacher said, well, you did the morning kindergarten. Can we do the afternoon kindergarten too? And I said, yeah, of course. And after that one, the third grade teachers came to me and said, we heard you did this great presentation. Can you come to our classes too? And the descriptions of Hanukkah when I did this at different age levels, of course, changed to what was appropriate for those kids. I tried to avoid any part of the conversation turning to religion, even though the word miracle kind of comes with the word religion, but not at that age. But what I would talk about was that Jewish people don't celebrate Christmas. And you'd see these little kids gasp, like, what? You don't celebrate Christmas? Because there were, what, three Jewish kids in the entire school, and two of them were mine. So, and they'd be shocked that they didn't celebrate Christmas. Why don't you celebrate Christmas? Well, that's kind of complicated, because I didn't want to get into, well, Jews don't believe that Jesus was the Messiah. Like, I didn't want to get into that. So I would say instead, do you really want to have one kind of food for the rest of your life? I mean, how would you be okay with me saying you can only have American, you know, not French, and peanut butter and jelly, and that's it? And, you know, of course, one in every class would be like, okay, because they're the picky eaters, right? A hot dog is fine for them. But the rest of the kids in the class were like, what do you mean? I said, well, you can't have any pasta because that's Italian. And you can't have any sushi because that's Japanese. And you can't have Chinese food. So no wontons, no crispy chicken, no crispy fried duck. Like, okay. And you can't have any kind of curries, you know, no Indian foods, because you can only have American foods. And the kids would light up. They'd be like, no way. Like, I could, no way. And I say, who likes sushi? And of course, there'd be just like three kids that would raise their hands and the rest would be making a face. Tolerance is a great first step, but tolerance is only the first step. Tolerance is putting on blinders and saying, as long as what you're doing doesn't affect me, I'm okay with it. You just put on these blinders and say, as long as it doesn't impact my life, do whatever you want. As long as it doesn't impact my life, that's tolerance. But embracing diversity, loving every individual for exactly what they are in that moment,
right?
That's where the magic happens.
And know that, you know, when you get to know me, I'm more than just an African-American. That's part of who I am. That is my culture. That's, you know, I look at the world that way, but I also look at the world as an extrovert. I also look at the world as, you know, someone who's traveled internationally. I also look at the world as someone who loves salsa dance, or as someone who loves to cook. And that could be Italian, it could be Japanese, it could be Korean, whatever it is. But when you meet someone, whether they're white, whether they're black, whether they're male, female, non-binary, transgender, whatever they are, they're more than what you see.
That's right.
You know, look at me, you see a Black person, you don't see someone who can quote from Ministry in their albums. You don't know that I know Frankie Goes to Hollywood, and I know, you know, all of that. But the only way you will know that is if you take the time to get to know me. Not what you see, but who I am as a person.
Because our identities are complicated.
They are. And that really is what makes us all interesting.
Definitely.
Is that we don't come from a cookie cutter. We're all different. We all have different loves, hates. I know I wrote a movie. It ended up being a short film starring with a performance by Danny Glover.
Oh, I love him.
P-N-O-K, Primary Next of Kin. And it's about these two soldiers who have to make three notifications. So in other words, they have to notify someone that their loved one was killed in action. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it the way I wrote it because it can be either side of a war. It can be any war, regardless of where it is in the world, because grief is universal. Love is universal. And if we look at things from a universal perspective, we see that we all have a lot more in common than we have apart. I mentioned earlier, my mom died. Who in our world cannot relate to that?
Right. Absolutely.
So look for times where we can come together. And if you look at people, if you get to know me, why shouldn't I be vice president of your company? Why shouldn't, you know, there's no reason to let something as superficial as color stop you from, I mean, a woman didn't hire me once because of that. We had a bunch of interviews on the phone. All she had to do was meet me. She came out into the waiting room. I was the only person there. She looked at me and turned around and went back because I guess she thought Karen Beecher was in the bathroom. So she came back out and she asked me, "You're Karen Beach?" And I said, "Yeah." Interview lasted 10 minutes. She didn't make eye contact with me before she let me out. But here's the thing. You talked to me on three different occasions. You had three different samples of my work. You knew I could do that job. Before she met me, she slipped and used the phrase, "When you start." Okay, but the only thing that changed between that was the fact that you now know I'm Black. So who is losing out?
She is. Clearly.
In 2020, or this happened like 2005, you know, for every person that wants to be for lack of a better word, an asshole, you can find people that aren't. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not the same, everybody doesn't do that. There's going to be somebody that's glad to have me and that I'm glad to work for.
Yep, absolutely. And I think that's something we have to hold on to. We have to remember that the majority of people are not like that, especially right. Once you get to know them.
And I think the majority have to speak up because they've been silent. And when they're silent, people on the wrong side of what will be the wrong side of history think that everybody agrees with them. They take silence as agreement. And so when people of color aren't in the room, when a lot of these conversations happen, you have to be the one to stand up and go, "You know what, dude, that's not cool. I don't agree."
Do you remember that picture of the Trump discussion on healthcare? And the whole room was men except the one woman who was taking notes. Do you remember seeing that picture that made the rounds? And it was about women's healthcare. And it's the same thing. And your organization at every level needs to be representative of the community that you serve.
Exactly. So
at every level. And I know that in Montana, we don't have nearly enough representation from Native Americans because we have quite a large population of Native Americans. And so it's not about quotas. It's about representing the community that you serve. If you don't have women at the table and you're talking about women's issues, you're going to come up against a brick. It's not going to work.
Well, so it's just like this, the first Friday of the month, my church, we go and we help the homeless, but the homeless center is closed. So we actually took food to the tent communities that I didn't even know were there, where the homeless live. And what was interesting is the homeless told us, we don't really need food. We need masks. We need hand sanitizer. We need clothing. But here's the thing. We wouldn't have known that if we hadn't talked to those people. So exactly. When you have a symposium on women's healthcare with no women, you're going to miss a lot of things that you need to know just because you don't know. You're a man. You don't know what it's like to have cramps. Just like for a long time, you couldn't get yeast infection medicine over the counter. What woman doesn't know when she has a yeast infection? I don't need you to tell me I have a yeast infection. I know what it is. Just give me the stuff. Right. I don't want to go to the doctor. Just let me go to CVS.
Right. There's so much around that drives me crazy.
But that's all I'm going to say. My rant about female products. Don't get me started about how much they cost.
No. Well, but it all comes down to the very beginning of this conversation, which is you have to have the right people at the table in order to serve them. You want to serve women, you have to have women at the table to make those decisions. You want to serve the homeless, you have to have a homeless voice to tell you what's going on in that area. You want to serve people of color, talk to people of color and find out what they need. And what I keep finding so interesting is there are different feelings about that. What you need as an individual woman of color is different from what my friend Heather might need in Denver.
But at the same token, people of color, if I'm the only one at the table, I have to talk to different people of color because we're not a monolith. What works for me might not work for someone else just because people of color. You have to look at people as individuals and look at people coming to the table with their own experiences.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the same with, we got into this here in the state of Montana because we have a variety of tribes that are represented here. And I can tell you their cultures on those reservations are different among them. I can tell you even Jewish people, every Jewish person has their own different belief and how they practice their religion. So the idea that you can address these issues on such a big level without talking to individuals, I think is just absurd.
But no, I feel like if you did take the time to talk to people, you'd make a friend. I'm all about friends. You'd make a friend.
Well, that is a wonderful way to end this conversation because I know we are. And someday you'll come back to Montana and I'll show you around. And I'm sure you'll get some funny looks, but mostly because you're walking with me.
I get funny looks. I give them funny looks back. I don't care. I'm just...
Yeah. We'll wave and smile and blow kisses.
As long as they're not purple gnomes, I'm good.
Okay. I'm going to find one of those and you're going to find it randomly in your mailbox.
And people on my street will be like, why is she running and screaming?
It has been really lovely.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
This has been so lovely, Karen. Yeah. And again, for our listeners, we will have our podcast blog associated with the podcast with links to Karen's Fun, Feisty, Fabulous podcast and some other things. And And it has just been a pleasure. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you for listening to Your Stories Don't Define You, How You Tell Them Will. If you're planning an event or company retreat and want to bring in a memorable, entertaining, and highly practical speaker as your keynote speaker or workshop facilitator, please visit us at elkinsconsulting.com to learn how we can help and provide a memorable keynote or breakout session. Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you.
Listen to me, honey, while I say, how could you tell me that you're going?